Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Yo, you want to see something cool? No? Well, I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to Shasta Unmasked. It's 6 p.m. It is Tuesday, and we are here to expose extremism, talk about it. Let's get some ideas flowing and some things going. Tonight we have Sasha Abramski. He's the author of the book Chaos Comes Calling. And go ahead and introduce yourself, sir. We've been highly anticipating this episode for sure.
Well, my name's Sasha Abramski. Oh. I'm a journalist. I write for The Nation magazine. And as you said, I'm the author of a new book called Chaos Comes Calling, a large part of which is set in Shasta County.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in Shasta County?
So I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist for about 30 years. I write not exclusively, but oftentimes on politics, on social justice themes. I've done a lot of work over the years on poverty, on inequality, on immigration, on drug policy, on homelessness, and so on. And for the last decade, I've been writing increasingly about political extremism in America. And I've gotten more and more interested as the Trump era has sort of continued apace at what all of it means, what it's doing to community, what it's doing to neighborhood, what it's doing to the ability of people to live together and to disagree peacefully. And I got involved in Shasta County's reporting of Shasta County about 2 or 3 years ago when Leonard Moti was recalled. And I'm sure all of your audience remembers that period and remembers what happened then and what it did to politics in the county that you live in. I spent a lot of time reporting, a lot of time interviewing people. The book is centered in two places. One of them, Shasta County, and the other one is a place called Squim on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington, which had many, not all, but many of the same political divisions and schisms that characterized Shasta County over the last few years. My feeling was that if I could tell a story well about two small communities that were being torn apart by politics, that I could tell a much bigger story about what was happening in America as a whole in the Trump era. And what was happening in a period where we were just absolutely saturated, A, with disinformation on social media, mm-hmm. B, with the sort of big lie politics of demagogic leadership, and C, with an increasing politics of rage, where people felt that they had the right to say and do pretty much anything, whether it was online death threats or whether it was literally going to a public health office and picketing outside with a gun. And to me, that was just an extraordinary story and it needed to be told.
So, and you're originally from the UK, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in London and I went to university at Oxford. I studied politics, philosophy, and economics at a college called Balliol College in Oxford.
And now you're located in the States?
Yeah, I've been here for a generation. I came to America as a young man. I went to Columbia Journalism School, and I've lived in California now for more than 20 years. So most of my reporting has been set in the American West over that period of time.
So when you talk to people from home and you try to explain to them what's going on in Shasta County, do they stare at you like you have lobsters crawling out of your ears?
Some of them do, some of them don't. I mean, a lot of people in England have been paying a lot of attention to what's going on in America for the reason that, you know, what happens in America matters globally. So when America goes a little bit crazy, when America enters a period of demagoguery, when America enters a period of political instability and violence, that has impacts all over the world in a way that, you know, probably no other national leadership has that kind of global footprint. So, you know, yes, some people in England are sort of bemused when I tell them stories about Shasta County or Squim or, you know, any of the other places I've been visiting. But a lot of people are aware that America's in this sort of really squirrely moment at this point in time.
So, in your research for your book, how many other places did you try to look for to compare Shasta County to try to find, or did you try to compare, you know, Shasta County to other counties in America or other areas of local politics to see if there was anything like it anywhere else?
Well, I mean, Shasta, I think, in some ways, went on a fairly unique jag within California. So the sort of extent to which it sort of had this rightward jag at the county level, even in other conservative counties here, you don't see quite that sort of lurch toward political extremism. But I do think around the country, especially as QAnon took off in 2017, 2018, especially as Trump ramped up his demagogy in the 2016 to 2020 period, and especially during the pandemic when there was so much dislocation at the local level and people were angry, they were scared, schools were being shut down, businesses were being shut down, there were public health mandates being put in place, and people got really scared. And I think it radicalized a lot of people and sort of pushed them in a rightward direction that they wouldn't necessarily otherwise have gone in. Maybe people who were moderately conservative became very conservative or very hard right. And I think that was playing out not just in Shasta County, obviously, but it's playing out in lots and lots of places around the country, which is why I thought that it was emblematic.
Mm-hmm.
If I could really get inside the heads of people in Shasta County and really tell an on-the-ground story of what was happening, it gave me an opportunity to tell the story of the Trump era and the pandemic era in a way I've been looking for years. I'd written hundreds of articles and columns over that period of time, but I've been looking for the sort of ideal way to tell it in book form. And I think I found it with Chaos Comes Calling. I think that your county and Squim provided a big enough story and a big enough platform that it really speaks to a larger American story at this point.
So were you surprised at how far everything kind of went askew? You know, living in California I'm a lifelong California native, and I've lived in liberal areas like the Bay Area, what you would consider liberal area, and then more conservative-leaning areas like Shasta County and that area. And watching things skew so hard and so fast was unnerving in ways where it's like you didn't know that your friends and neighbors could just, the whole QAnon thing, just go unquestioningly potato. And I really don't have any other way to put it.
I wasn't surprised for the simple reason that I've been reporting on this on the ground for years and years. I mean, even before the Trump era, I'd done a lot of thinking and writing about it, political extremism. When I was a very, very young journalist back in the 1990s, I did a whole bunch of reporting on the rise of sort of really hard right movements at a period when the militias were rising. So it didn't really surprise me that this was happening. And I had seen what was going on social media. I could sort of, everybody can viscerally experience the level of disinformation and the level of vitriol that gets unleashed on social media.
Yeah.
So no, I wasn't sort of surprised that that was happening in Shasta. And I knew that there were these very conservative influences in Shasta that would push much of the populace rightward. But it was nevertheless eye-opening. And the thing that was most eye-opening to me was the hatred that was unleashed online. I mean, people were saying the most extraordinary things online behind this sort of thin veneer of an anonymity. They thought they had this perfect right to send death threats to public health officers, to, you know, glory in these threats to torture and maim and, you know, do other hideous things to, again, public health officers, doctors, politicians that they were in disagreement with, neighbors they were in disagreement with. The lack of civility that was unleashed in this period. And, you know, when you read my book, you'll see it because I quote Facebook postings, I quote emails, and some of it's absolutely blood-curdling.
Yeah.
And when you realize that millions of Americans are now sort of going online and putting forward this nonsense and this bile, it's really disconcerting. It means that a measurable percentage of the population at this point has just utterly turned its back on civility.
It kind of trips me out in a way, too, because people are, like, so willing to just post crimes online for the gram. Like, it's something that's cool to do. And, like you're saying, like, back in the day in the early 90s, whenever some of these, like, hard right, like the Tea Party and, like, stuff like that, where these hard right movements were, and especially the militias, because I lived in a very rural, like, area out there where people had, you know, whole, like, a gun safe, haha, that's cute. I have a whole room for all of my guns. Was a thing. What do you think? How do I frame this question without it being 5-minute diatribe. Actually, you know what? I have an idea. Let's go to commercial first, and then on the other side, I want to talk about the role that social media has to play in amplifying these hard right extremist groups and things like that.
That works for me.
All right, let's go to commercial. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Fought. Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday. Right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
This is Carl Bott. Join me on Tuesday as we welcome Heather Hadwick, candidate for State Assembly District 1. Let's find out some things about Heather and what she wants to achieve if elected. This and much more on Tuesday, right here. Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
Hi.
Hello, hello, hello. We're back. Thank you for tuning in to Shasta Unmasked. We do the show every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on KCNR, 1460 a.m., 96.5 FM. We have with us tonight, Sasha. Oh, I don't want to mispronounce your last name again. I'm sorry. I'm hella Californian. but I know. So before the break, I was going to start to ask you about what you think and how you think that social media has ramped up the speed of extremism, especially when it comes to moral panics and cults of personality. And I think mostly that's what we're dealing with in these spaces, right? You have like one person who is the megaphone and then all the little people around him that just start to these tentacles of misinformation, and then they spread it to their uncles and their grandmothers on Facebook, and then here we are. So
I think the thing that social media does, it speeds everything up. So if you have a rumor, that rumor circulates at warp speed. If you have somebody deliberately spreading a political lie or, you know, any other kind of lie, again, as long as it's sort of click-worthy, it's going to get clicks, and by virtue of getting clicks, it's going to be high profile, And by virtue of being high profile, it's going to acquire a veneer of respectability, of reality. So the thing about social media, the way it works is it's algorithm based. So if I pick up a physical newspaper, I just get the news. I get the same news that my neighbor's getting. If they pick up the same newspaper, I get the same news that the person across the town is getting. If they pick up the same newspaper, there are gatekeepers who decide, well, this is important. This is worth sort of spending a bit of time on. There are editors who make sure the story is told well. And ideally in magazines and newspapers, there are fact checkers who make sure that there's sort of, you know, accuracy there. None of that holds in social media. So social media is algorithm driven. I get a different set of news feeds from you. You get a different set of news feeds from your neighbor or your brother or your sister. Everybody gets their own personalized news feeds. And the thing is, there's no veneer of accuracy. So let's say I'm somebody who tends towards conspiracy thinking, and I tend towards thinking that there's this sort of big deep state conspiracy to overturn the politicians that I like. Well, the way social media works is if I start clicking on stories like that, it's going to feed me one story after another story after another story that doesn't challenge my beliefs, but reinforces them,
right,
regardless of the accuracy of those beliefs. So all I'm getting is self-reinforcement. I click on a story that says, yes, there's a deep state conspiracy. That sends me to another story that says there's an even deeper state conspiracy. And after I've been online for a few hours, I'm completely saturated in misinformation. And that's what we see when people are getting their news solely from their social media feeds, whether it's Telegram, whether it's Instagram, whether it's Facebook, X, whatever it might be, you get a premium of misinformation. And it's extraordinarily dangerous for a democracy because democracy relies on accurate information. That's the currency. That's the coin of a democracy. And when it starts to break down, when you have rumors replacing facts, when you have a sort of vacuum that is filled by conspiracists, that's when you get this sort of skewing, angry, broiling political culture. And that's where we are at the moment in 2024.
So myself, I have also been deeply saturated in following conspiracy movements and extremism and moral panics and things like that for the last 10 years. And the thing that we have been seeing, and by the royal we, I mean our podcast network, which is Echoplex Media, and I have a producer that's been doing this with me for the same, a good friend of mine. In following these extremists and these like, I always call them cults personality because it just certainly just seems to be what they are. The algorithm of those groups just on their own, how they rise and fall, seems to, like, the length of that has been shortening. So you have, like, one person who, like, rockets up in popularity and spreads all of their bad ideas, and then there ends up to be a bunch of conflict, and then they shoot back down, and then that movement goes away. And the shorter that these algorithms get, the more extreme the behavior seems to be, because I also feel like it's that that attention span thing where it's, like, if something isn't, like, super exciting and really involved and, like, nothing you've ever seen before, the people seem to lose interest. And then, you know, the movement goes away. So tying this into social media.
That's right. I mean.
No, go ahead.
Sorry, go on. I was going to say, when you're talking about the short attention span, you know, we click, 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 and we become twitchy. I mean, we basically behave as if we have, you know, the attention span of a gnat. We spend, you know, a few seconds on a story, and then we have to move on to get our next fix. Well, the thing is, some stories are worth sort of cogitating. They're worth spending a little bit of time thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But if we reduce everything to entertainment, we read a story, doesn't matter how big it is, it's just entertainment, and then we move on. We lose the ability to morally calibrate. We lose the ability to slow down and say, well, you know, is this how we want to behave as a society? What is the implication of this? Do we really want to be a community where we're known for sending death threats to our local public health officer? You know, do we really want to be a community where we celebrate the militias or whatever it might be? Everything becomes entertainment. We lose the quality of sort of moral calculus. And I think it's really, really bad. You know, and it's not unique to America. I think countries around the world have experienced the same thing in recent years. The way the internet is working at the moment, it's a sort of anti-attention span device. It encourages us to not be able to hold on to an idea or a story or, you know, a moral calculus for more than a few seconds. And that's just bad. It doesn't do our culture any good. It doesn't do our politics any good. It doesn't do our education system any good. It certainly doesn't do our brain function any good.
No. And that's one of the main problems with quote unquote mainstream news becoming entertainment news, is because people can't discern the difference. Especially if, and I feel like if news is bland and just fact driven and just straightforward, it almost gets zero traction, because if there isn't any, if there isn't any excitement behind it, then it obviously just isn't, it's not something that, should deem attention, get your attention, which is such a weird space to be in. If you consider that we were almost in an opposite, in an opposite situation, even, 25 years ago, where, parents of my parents' generation were, don't believe everything that you read and don't believe everything that you see on TV. And now those people will only believe what they read and see on TV and don't understand that that is fed to them on a confirmation bias because of social media algorithms. And there's no way that you can try to explain things to them to get them to understand that they've just been kind of been sucked in by, a cult or a space that is not necessarily a cult, but a very cult-like space where there's no room for discernment. It's either you go along with everything or you're shunned and pushed to the side because you're not extreme enough.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I don't think there's no way to explain. I have journalism students. I have writing students. I spend a lot of time talking about media literacy and the ability to discern rumor from fact and the ability to discern, relatively reliable sources from relatively unreliable sources. Look, I mean, there are ways to use the education system, for example, to encourage media literacy. We mandate that students learn civics. We mandate that students learn reading. We mandate they learn math. There are certain things we think are important enough that we have chosen as a society to embed in the education system. You can make a very good argument, and some countries have already made that argument and changed their education curriculum, that media literacy is now just as important. And so there are countries, I think Norway, though I wouldn't swear to it, but there are some countries now that are embedding media literacy classes into their education curriculum. I think we should do that here. Doesn't mean we should say students should read left wing or right wing or any other wing. We should just spend a bit of time getting young people to be less gullible when it comes to information that they're presented with. Because if they learn at a young age to be more selective in how they get information, that will carry through into the middle age, into old age, and so on. And eventually it will result in a much more media literate, much more sophisticated media culture. I think we're in this weird moment at the moment where traditional ways of getting information have just utterly broken down, and did so at extraordinary speed. They broke down in the sort of 5 to 10 year period, and they've been replaced by these very shoddy systems where you have platforms, social media platforms, that essentially deny their information providers. They just say, we're a platform. Other people provide the information. Well, first of all, that's nonsense. And second of all, that's just a recipe for chaos. It's a recipe for the spreading of misinformation. And we're seeing it. We're seeing this sort of absolute free-for-all where the most extreme voices, the loudest, craziest interpretations of events get traction. It's why someone like Alex Jones and his InfoWars can have this absolutely vast, vast network of followers, even though he's spouting complete and utter gibberish. It's so dangerous when you have people, for example, saying that school shootings are false flag operations. I mean, where does that come from? How does someone honestly go down a rabbit hole to such an extent that they can see images of dead children in school shootings and somehow think that's a false flag operation? It's just almost beyond comprehension. And yet for a huge number of people, that is their reality and that is their way of interpreting the world.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing that in my other network that we have covered extensively. Is this, especially when it comes to, like, when the whole Sandy Hook thing was going down, a lot of the people that we were covering in conspiracy theories jumped on that false flag wagon and unbelievably were so self-absorbed and so callous to the actual event, to use that for self-promotion is a whole other level of people seeking out approval and you know, recognition and internet fame. We have to go to a break again, and on the other side of the break, I want to talk about schools, because you mentioned journalism school and using information to kind of combat that. And that's the other issue that we're having in Shasta County, is these extremist movements creeping their way into the schools. So we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
This is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more, right here on The Ramsey Show. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
This is Carl Bott. Join me on Tuesday as we welcome Heather Hadwick, candidate for State Assembly District 1. Let's find out some things about Heather and what she wants to achieve if elected. This and much more on Tuesday, right here. Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
We're back with Shasta Unmasked here on KCNR. It is Tuesday, and we're talking about extremism with Sasha. I'm sorry, again, how do you pronounce your last? Because I'm, like I said, I'm from California, so I say Abramski, but that's because I'm undistinguished. Hello, sir?
Yeah, it's just a soft A, Abramski.
Abramski, okay. I don't want to mispronounce your name. So when we went to break, we were talking about, or you have mentioned that you you work with journalist students, and one of the issues that we have in Shasta County, and if you've studied Shasta County at all, you know that, or any extremist movements, you've probably heard of Moms for Liberty, and of course, Moms for Liberty is pushing really, really hard to get their candidates on elected to school boards, so they can push these extremist things through schools and start, you know, screwing with kids at a really young age. And that is terrifying to me.
Yeah, I mean, Moms for Liberty basically coalesced during the pandemic, and they were one of the groups that really got very active against school shutdowns in the early days of the pandemic. And, you know, that was a legitimate debate. There were plenty of people on all sides of the political spectrum who were uncomfortable with, you know, first of all, school closures, and second of all, the duration of those school closures. But then Moms for Liberty morphed into something completely different. And it started going on sort of immersing itself in the culture war issues, especially around LGBTQ issues and library issues, whether or not books that were LGBTQ friendly or discussed race or discussed other sort of quote unquote controversial issues could be in a school library. And that's when they went sort of on this sort of dramatically rightward jag. And what you've seen in the last three, four years is this concerted effort by a very well organized on the ground right-wing movement to take over school boards. And if you take over school boards, you impact local curriculum, you impact how schools function, you impact the cultural climate on schools, whether or not those schools are inclusive or exclusive, whether or not they teach kids to think critically or basically clamp down on all critical thinking. And that has a huge impact on the kids, it has a huge impact on teachers, it has a huge impact on parents, and ultimately it has a huge impact on the broader community. I interviewed quite a few people from Moms for Liberty for stories I wrote for The Nation magazine, some of which made their way into the book Chaos Comes Calling. Look, I think it's one of those movements that's sort of, it hasn't come out of nowhere, but the sort of full force and fury of that movement, I think, took a lot of people by surprise. And I think, you know, we haven't seen the end of it, and it's really playing out, as you said, in places like Shasta County, on the ground at school board meetings and the school board elections.
What's really frustrating is trying to break through the noise of this loud minority who it seems like they are able to, on one hand, saturate social media with their extremist viewpoints while also still keeping the people that follow them in a small and tight echo chamber so that they can't be reached or reasoned with in order to try and right the ship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that the more that people sort of stay within an echo chamber, the harder they are to reach politically. And you do end up with this situation where you get these sort of self-reinforcing extremist groups and anti-rationalist groups. And it's quite dangerous because if you're in an echo chamber, A, you're getting misinformation, but B, you're just being egged on. You're getting more and more people who are sort of saying, yes, go down this route, go down this rabbit hole, and fewer people challenging you about whether or not any of that makes sense.
So when you speak to a journalist student, what type of advice do you give them whenever they are, like, do you even go into a conversation about how to maybe kind of, like, deprogram people? Or is it just, like, tell me, how can we combat this? If we have, like, you're dealing with people who live in a small community, who have limited funds, they can't afford huge campaigns, and they're trying to, like, save the education of an entire generation's worth of kids. Like, what do we do?
I mean, what I tell my students is always be curious and always think outside the box. I think there's nothing more dangerous politically than a culture where people have sort of lost the ability to think across lines and lost the ability to read across lines and only want to be self-reinforced. So, you know, what I will always tell my students is be curious, you know, get out of your silos and think about the world in as complex a way as possible and think about nuance, because nuance is really important in our world. And unless you think with nuance, you know, it doesn't matter if you're left-wing or right-wing. If all you do is just think in black and white terms, you're going to lose the complexity and the beauty of the human story. And I think that that's one of the things that's been happening in communities as the culture has gotten angrier and angrier and sort of more and more internet driven. We've lost that ability to think across our sort of preconceptions and to think outside of the boxes that we create for ourselves.
So, What do the people back home think about the election? I'm just curious. Is it?
I think people are, you know, in all honesty, I've traveled a lot around the world in the last few years. I think people are bemused at what's going on in American politics. I think there's a real sort of sense that this is a country that is floundering politically and that, you know, in many ways has lost its way. When I talk politics with people, you know, in England or, you know, in most other countries I've visited, the two things that people are most sort of incredulous about, one of them is the sort of rise of this very demagogic, angry, sort of scream-based political culture, and the other is the prevalence of guns, which I know in Shasta County is an absolutely huge issue and has become something of a sort of litmus test for political figures, especially conservatives. But, you know, most of the rest of the world, the idea that you have a sort of God-given right to carry semi-automatic, high-powered rifles, I mean, people, you know, think that's extraordinary. And, you know, to be honest, I think it's rather extraordinary, too. So I think those are the two issues that, you know, really do sort of encourage comments from people overseas.
And that was an issue that that's an ongoing issue that is constantly coming up in the Board of Supervisors meetings. Do you ever watch the Shasta County Board of Supervisors meetings?
I did when I was writing the book. I watched it quite a lot. And, you know, again, I thought it was, you know, I thought you could see a measurable slide towards, you know, really quite extreme worldview.
Right.
As the pandemic unfolded. And, you know, it was bemusing to me. I mean, I watched these meetings. I watched dozens of them online, and it was just completely bemusing to me, the sheer level of rage that was being expressed.
What was the first thing that caught you at a Board of Supervisors meeting that got you interested?
You know, I think it was the sort of online, well, not online, the groups that were coming in specifically to attack Lena Moti and Mary Rickert, and the sense that they had a sort of right to absolutely ignore public health mandates. So it wasn't just having a debate about whether or not this or that was legitimate. It was the idea that any mandate, even at the sort of depth of a pandemic, was completely beyond the pale. And that any politician, no matter how conservative they were, who abided by those health mandates was to be driven out of office and to be, you know, subject to a vilification campaign. I just thought it was completely, you know, as I said, quite bemusing that level of vitriol could have been unleashed against people who were trying during a once in a century pandemic to keep people safe the best they knew how.
Not only the best that they knew how, but the best that they knew how within the boundaries of how that they knew the public was going to react. Back then when Joe Comente was still on the board, he had made it a point that they were going the education route rather than the enforcement route. And all people kind of had to do was just lay low and they go through it and not go through a whole bunch of stuff. And then the extremist movement of people who think that their God-given and constitutional rights are being trampled upon because all they had to do was put on a mask, came out and threatened people's lives over it. And that is unbelievable. And I think that, and I really believe that outside of a world of social media, if social media didn't exist and things like that, where you weren't going to get a bunch of attention right away, things like that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, that social media has the ability to turn someone who was anonymous one day into a superstar, a viral sensation the next. And that's very seductive. And
yeah,
it led to an awful lot of people wanting their moment in the spotlight and their moment in the fame. And, you know, some of those people were very powerful orators. You know, if you read my book, you'll see that even though I disagree with some of them, I could see the power of their oratory. I could see the sort of magnetism of their personality. And they had followers. And they had the ability to help shape the political response, and they had the ability to help shape the popular understanding of the pandemic and of the public health measures. And, you know, in one way, that's democracy in action, I suppose. But in another way, it's also rumor in action. You know, when you have social media basically creating superstars regardless of whether or not what they're saying has a basis in science and so on, well, you know, that sort of entertainment maybe, but it's not science-based or expertise-based politics.
Right. Okay, we're up against the last break of the evening, so we're going to go ahead and take care of that. When we come up on the other side, we will talk about if there's if anything short and sweet that we can do or say to help our friends who need a little bit of guidance, and we'll find out a little bit more information about where you can get Sasha's book and where you can find the rest of his articles and stuff. So we will be right back.
This is Carl Bott. Join me on Tuesday as we welcome Heather Hadwick, candidate for State Assembly District 1. Let's find out some things about Heather and what she wants to achieve if elected. This and much more on Tuesday, right here. Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
But join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Yeah, help. That was a good song choice, Ben. we're back here with Shasta Unmasked, our last segment for this evening. We have our guest, Sasha Abramski, from who wrote the book Casting's Calling. And Sasha, please, if you have any advice or ideas for the people who are taking the time out of their week and out of their day and out of their brain space to wrap themselves around these issues and try to bring ideas forward and talk some sense in the public spaces, like at the supervisors meeting, at other school board meetings, at city council, the people that are just regular people trying to talk some sense. What can we say? Or is there anything?
No, I mean, in all seriousness, there's a temptation to tune out. And certainly when I was in Shasta and when I was in Scrim doing the reporting, I talked to a lot of people who were just tired by all of the anger, all of the vitriol, all of the theatrics at these meetings. And their temptation was to just sort of tune out, not go to the meetings, not vote, and so on. From my perspective, that's the wrong response. And the reason I say that is when people push back, they actually have an awful lot of power in their own hands. And this was seen especially in SQIM, where if you read my book, you'll find that people in SQIM, a lot of people got really angry by the fact that their government, local government, was being controlled by supporters of QAnon. And they got really angry with the dysfunction at local government and the inability to just do basic things. And they organized. They formed what they called the SQIM Good Governance League. And they organized. And a part of my book is the story of that organization, the story of the movement building. And it's really interesting. And the characters that I encountered and that my readers will encounter, they have stories worth listening to. And they have these sort of, you know, oftentimes larger than life personalities. And I think that, you know, my book, there's a lot of darkness in Chaos Comes Calling, but it isn't all darkness because there's also the light of what happens when people do realize that if they're not passive, they have a lot of power. And that's a powerful light. And so, you know, when you're saying, you know, what can people listening to this do when they go to meetings? How can they stay sort of sane in a crazy world? Really, just by organizing and by forming communities that push back against this and by pushing what they see as a more rational, maybe calmer version of politics. And I think in the long run, that's quite a powerful phenomenon.
Yeah, in my experience, I'll fully admit that I'm an online troll. And in my experience, especially dealing with conspiracy communities and things like that, where you're trying to like distract the main character just to keep their attention so they do maybe less damage out in the real world, trying to, like, you're never going to change the mind of somebody who is so extreme that there's, I won't say that there's no coming back, but there's little chance of changing somebody's mind who's that far out. But trying to speak to the people who are paying attention to them that might be on the fence or that might need a little bit of guidance or who are undecided and looking for a little more information on how that's possible sometimes in these days. Trying to speak to those people to get them to, like you said, think outside the box, be more curious about other information, try to be more critical of the spaces that are, that do reinforce and reconfirm their beliefs and the things that they are talking about and thinking about and seeing in these spaces that they are comfortable in, because it is uncomfortable to have somebody challenge your ideas, especially if you won't just admit that you were swindled by a con man.
I think that the more people can, you know, the more people can engage with others, the better. You know, if you just say, "All right, I'm giving up on this group of people because I don't agree with them," well, you know, maybe temporarily satisfying, but in the long run, it doesn't help you establish a sort of more inclusive political entity, more inclusive community. So I think one of the things I learned when I was reporting the book is just how important it is to break down those silos. And the SQIM Good Governance League did a really good job of that. They didn't say, "Oh, we're only in it for Democrats, we're only in it for lefties, we're only in it for progressives." Quite the contrary. They said, "Look, we're going to organize people across the political spectrum who are furious at the dysfunction of the city government." And they did. They had liberals, they had Democrats, they had progressives. They also had some fairly conservative, self-identifying Republicans. So I think that the ability to, you know, create a broad-based coalition is really quite important. You know, one of the most interesting groups that I've done journalism work with is a group called Down Home North Carolina. And I did a feature article on them for The Nation a few years ago. And Down Home North Carolina is working in very poor, mainly white, working class, rural areas of North Carolina. And they're trying to organize people around issues like access to healthcare, around issues like improving the minimum wage, job security, and so on. And they're doing it in areas of the state that are really quite conservative politically. And I asked the founder, a woman called Bridget O'Flaherty, I said, well, you know, why are you focusing on these very conservative areas? And she said, well, unless we do it, all of these white nationalist and supremacist groups are going to come in and fill the void. And they were. There were all these sort of nationalist groups who were going into rural North Carolina, talking to people about the exact same grievances, but they were blaming, instead of sort of saying, you know, it's the fault of politically powerful or, you know, well-connected corporations or whatever down in North Carolina was saying, these racist groups were saying it's the fault of black people or brown people or gay people or whatever it might be. And unless you step in and sort of say, all right, this is hard work, but it's worth having those conversations on the door, it's worth having those conversations in community meetings, unless progressives do that, you can be damn sure that conservatives and people far to the right of conservatives will fill that void. So this isn't really a sort of matter of political choice. It's a matter of political urgency.
Right.
That in an era as sort of rageful as we're in today, there's just no room to leave a vacuum, because that vacuum will be filled with really ugly political movements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of room for really ugly political movements to find their way in for people who feel like they've been disenfranchised. And that's
absolutely.
Just, yeah. I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. An hour goes by super, super fast. I would love to have you on, again, and maybe in a longer form thing on our other network on Twitch and have a longer chat, because I think that this conversation is one that needs to continue, and people who are, you know, that have information from looking at all sides of things for a very long time to be able to explain how these things happen and work is super important. Please tell everybody where they can find you and just where they can find everything that you do, because it's super interesting.
they can find me on social media, actually. They find me on X if they want to get me there. I do a lot of lecturing. I've been going around the country talking about my book. And they can find the book. I mean, I assume that the local bookstores in Reading have it, but if they don't, Amazon certainly is stocking it. And, you know, pretty much any Barnes & Noble will have it and so on.
Awesome, awesome. Do you have is there a sequel coming? You got Shasta number 2, Electric Boogaloo?
You know, I've written 10 books over the years. None of them have been sequels. So not be a sequel on this one.
I don't blame you. The brain worms that you probably need to get out of there from just finishing this one.
Yeah, I like bouncing from one topic to the next.
All righty, sir. Again, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Shasta Unmasked. We do this every week, Tuesdays from 6 to 7 o'clock. Today was a Board of Supervisors meeting, so if you haven't caught that or you're not going to watch it on the website, you can tune in right after this at twitch.tv/EchoPlexMedia. I will be continuing the live stream over there and watching the BOS meeting again for everybody's entertainment and for my own self-destruction. Again, Sasha, thank you so much for joining me this evening. We really, really appreciate it. You're doing the Lord's work out there, and there's not enough that can be said for people who are deep in the trenches and down in those rabbit holes trying to dig out all the information so that we can be informed and have some insight as to how what we're doing in small spaces affects other areas. And I think that those spaces and those ideals need to have a megaphone. And again, you know, thank you very, very much. We appreciate it.
Well, glad to be on the show. Thanks for having me on.
All right. You have a good night, sir.
You too. Take care.
You too. All righty, everybody. Thank you, listeners. That was freaking awesome. Tune in next week where we don't talk to him. We talk to him every week. Have a good night, everybody.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.